Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor of AllYouCanHeat.com and writer for FanSided. With me, as always, is co-president of the Shabazz Napier Fan Club, Dave Vermeil.
How you doing, man?
Good. So, we're coming off this Hawks game. The Heat are 0-4. I thought maybe we needed another guard. Shannon Brown looked really good in that game, and so did Shabazz Napier in the last two preseason games. Eric Spoelstra's been doing some different things with his rotation, but Shabazz Napier's getting some minutes, and he looks really good, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Much more comfortable, I guess. His success over the first couple of games maybe could be attributed to the fact that he was playing against weaker competition, being in the third or fourth quarters, maybe against scrubs, although, they are competing for a job, but... Having him come in there with Chalmers out because of his hip injury, and we got to see him run with the first teamers and play against a higher level of competition, he did really well. I think his handle's pretty good. His defense is great. And the only concern that we've seen is his outside shot, which he was able to at least knock down the three-pointer yesterday. So, and in a clutch moment of the game as they were mounting a comeback in the fourth quarter. So that was very encouraging to see that.
We've talked about this, but he just has such a knack for creating plays. And for getting guys open, there's that one play where he got Danny Granger open on that behind-the-back bounce pass where he was struggling. That wasn't the Hawks game. That was against the... Was that against the Cavs? I can't remember.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
And we haven't talked since the Cavs game, but like that was that's the play that stands out in the preseason because Chalmers and Gold don't make that play. That just doesn't happen. And Napier just almost effortlessly makes that play. And it really, like, it's a small thing, but when Granger's struggling, that's what you need from a point guard, is to put, almost like a quarterback, is to put that ball in position for, a wide receiver to make his move after the catch, and Napier just kind of gets the ball to guys in position to score, and those behind-the-back passes and things like that, it's not just flashy. I think a lot of casual fans might look at that and, oh, he's just being flashy, but it takes the defense off guard, and it makes a defender maybe one step slower to close out, and that's all Danny Granger needs is just another second to get that shot off and give him a little bit more space so they can get in rhythm.
Yeah, and I think you see that move and you kind of look at the difference between, say, Napier and Chalmers and Cole, whereas, Rio takes that shot because he doesn't give a damn who's in front of him or ahead of him or above him or anything like that. He'll take that shot, he'll bounce it high off the backboard, whether it goes, it doesn't, who cares, I'm Rio, that's all that matters to me. Cole doubles back around the baseline, and then he kind of, kicks it out to the wing somewhere, and then, wait for LeBron to manifest the play somehow. Instead, Napier makes something happen and turns it around and makes a good play out of it. So that was very encouraging. I saw him in yesterday's game against the Hawks kind of, I wouldn't go so far as to say maybe force it, but he was definitely, he looks a lot to get somebody going. And that's, you want that from your point guard, not at the sacrifice of your own ability to get the shot off. So, I think it's going to be a challenge for him as he continues to get some more minutes with the starters, how often he takes that shot versus how often he tries to get somebody going. So that's something to look out for in the next couple of games.
Absolutely. And I think once he gets more comfortable and more in rhythm and just kind of more in tune of what's expected of him, that's the key. I thought Spoelstra, at the end of after the Cavs game, said something like, he really showed his potential tonight. And right. That sounds like a throwaway comment, but it just proves that that's the kind of game he wants from Napier. I mean, that's the potential that he's looking at, is that shot creator for not just himself, but for other players. And I think that was really key, because if Napier could do that, I really think there's an opportunity where he could start some games this season. I'm not ruling that out. I think a lot of people are ruling out, this rookie point guard starting over Chalmers or Cole, but he's playing better than either of those guys. I mean, Chalmers is out with a hip pointer, still just kind of recovering. He took a pretty tough fall on that hip against the Cavaliers. and didn't play against the Hawks. Cole is not playing poorly, but he's not necessarily doing anything to wow anybody. I think as the season goes along, Napier has progressed a lot just within this preseason from what he was in Summer League. If that's a sign of how quickly he's going to get used to the NBA and become a factor in something as a regular rotation player, he could start this season.
Yeah, and I think that goes a long way towards building confidence in Pat Riley's draft selection, because I think a lot of maybe Heat fans on the periphery probably just saw him as this kind of token gesture to try and lure LeBron back, because he had, you know, been so encouraging and supportive of him because of Napier's performance in the NCAA tournament. And so you kind of thought that maybe this draft selection and trading away a pick in order to acquire him was just kind of saying, hey, you know, we're getting the player that you want, that you've said you want. But now this kind of justifies the pick a lot more, because there definitely is potential and he can definitely lead this team. So I think it's a great thing to see. And, you know, he's all part of this youth movement. You know, since the expectations are lower this season, I think it's more important than ever for the Heat organization to do something they haven't done over the last 4 years, and that's kind of build younger players, coach them up, get them to perform at a higher level, because we're not just looking at the next couple of years or the immediate future like we were with the LeBron era, but we're looking at the distant future and how to build this team when we have to perhaps rebuild it again in 2016 when there's more salary cap available. We want some key younger pieces in place so that we can add that to the future franchise.
I'm glad you brought that up, because James Ennis has also been playing really, really well. And
yes,
there's a couple of guys that are in front of him in this rotation as of now, who might not be in front of him if the Heat really do look to make developing these young guys a priority. Danny Granger and Sean Williams right now.
Right.
Danny Granger's struggling, man. He's knocking down shots, but you look at he was 3 of 6 from three-point range last night against the Hawks, which is good. But when you consider he hit his first two within, what was that, like the first 4 minutes of the game or something like that?
Right.
And then after that, he was 1 for 4. That's not great, and especially for the length of the rest of the ball game. So he's struggling, and with his closeouts, he looks slow. On offense, he's slow cutting, he's slow moving, and that just kind of ruins the flow of the offense. It's not just what he needs to, it's not just a spot he needs to get to, but if he needs to get to a spot to trigger another ball move and another ball screen or something, it just slows down the entire process. Whereas James Ennis is fast, and he's just kind of bubbling. He's just ready to do something, right? And I think Ennis is really going to be a factor to get more playing time as well. I think Napier and Ennis could be within the top eight, you know, if the Heat make the playoffs and are able to focus on developing those two. They could be in that top eight, the top eight guys for them.
Yeah, there's so much to look at with Ennis and the potential there, because, I mean, you do look at Granger and Williams, and I think you have to pretty much assume that once McRoberts comes back, I would hope, or maybe not hope, that's a little too harsh, although that's the way I feel, that Williams falls out of the rotation altogether. Like, I know we were hoping that there might be some potential there and that he might be able to, reclaim some of that shooting stroke he had with the Knicks, but that doesn't seem likely.
What I'm so disappointed, David.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to be my Tony Douglas this year. I need to find a new one. I don't know who it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not going to be Williams, though. I mean, I think he seems to be one of those guys that's on the bubble there. I mean, maybe you can hope for Shannon Brown, because at least there's some athleticism there, whereas Williams, I mean, he doesn't seem to offer much. You know, if he's not knocking down that outside shot, what's he able to do? So, I mean, you've got to look at that as he's definitely going to be one of those players on the bubble. He might not even make the final roster, although I don't know. Granger, you know, I think there's still hope for him, because we saw last night that with Roberts out and Udonis not being able to be much of a contributor, you at least have some versatility where how you can insert Granger into the lineup. You started him at the four. I know they had discussed that earlier in the preseason, and it was nice to actually see that happen. And it wasn't necessarily a bad move. I don't know if it was the strongest one, but it paid off when he hit those couple of shots. But if he's going to get tired as the game goes on, how much can we really expect from him? I mean, it's weird to see a player fatigue that quickly in games where he's a factor in the first quarter and then not one for the remainder of the game. And that's, you know, he's not going to start, not if McRoberts is. So I wonder how he's going to be able to make himself a contributor over the course of the season. But having said that, you know, he provides that versatility that Ennis doesn't have, but Ennis is able to do everything else. I mean, he was such a factor. Like, you could feel this excitement and this buzz as soon as he came in. Maybe it was because he was playing in the home crowd, but he just seemed to do it all. I mean, those long limbs of him were very Deng-like, you know, in that he was intercepting passes and breaking up things. He was just a disruptive force on defense, which was the knock against him. And then, although he tried to force it a little bit too much on offense as far as his passes is concerned, he was a pretty decent ball handler, and his shot was amazing. I mean, he hit a couple three-pointers, and, of course, the overall athleticism. That's just, I think this is what's got everybody so excited, is that in looking to replace LeBron James, who was the ultimate athlete as far as the NBA is concerned, I mean, you're kind of hoping that Ennis transforms into maybe LeBron light, and I know that some people are already claiming he's King James II, but I think that's overstating things.
A little bit.
He's certainly encouraging, and I had said, like, with Napier, that maybe, you know, playing against the fourth quarter and, you know, third quarter competition, maybe that's what he was getting as productive or being as productive as he was. But, you know, he was one of the first guys off the bench yesterday, and he was really solid, dynamic. I mean, I'm excited about seeing his potential. I don't know what his ceiling might be, because you kind of hope that he'll be a very, you know, productive regular person in the rotation, but I'm encouraged from what I've seen, that's for sure.
And that's okay to eat up second and third unit guys. Like, there's a role for that in the NBA. That's an okay thing to be. And if that is a ceiling, that's fine. And I don't think it is, but maybe if that's a ceiling for this season, that's an important role. Because if he's that one of those first guys off the bench, if he's like a regular second unit guy, and he could just get in there and be more athletic than guys on other teams, the second units, that's huge. Maybe he's not as disciplined or as, maybe discipline's not the right word, but maybe he's just not as polished as you'd like him to be right now, right, to play with maybe some first unit guys where you kind of have to be on your game. But if he could just get in there in the second quarter and third quarters and just kind of just out-athleticism those other guys, then that's fine. And I think that would be certainly an important thing for the Heat to have, especially because that second unit really struggled last year. And with just that, with that athleticism. And if he can come in, and he doesn't have to be a great defender, but if he could just close out, like Danny Granger couldn't, like Shane Battier couldn't last season, just close out those three-pointers, just make them think, make them not hesitate to shoot, just get somebody around those three-point shooters, that's good, right, too.
And it kind of replaces what I think everybody was hoping Beasley would be able to do last year, you know, that he's kind of a instant energy, instant offense, and then he happens to play pretty decent defense, at least from what we've seen over the last game. So he might be an improvement over that role that Beasley held last year, hoping that he might be able to be a factor with the second team. So I'm curious to see where it all pans out.
Yeah, and speaking more about Granger, he played power forward, started at power forward last night against the Hawks. So we've seen him at a little bit of the two, mostly small forward, and power forward last night. With Mick Roberts being out, Spoelstra's kind of went in three different directions. He's went with Haslam, Sean Williams, and then Granger. It's giving him an opportunity to see who that backup power forward is going to be. I think Chris Anderson is clearly the third big, and that's really what you need when you're a small ball team like Miami. It's just three bigs, three guys that can play. Chris Anderson is at a point where, and he showed it kind of last year towards the end, maybe he's not where he usually was playing, like a pretty solid 20 minutes a game. Maybe he's more of a 15-minute guy now. He's just, there's, something's lost there. He's just getting older, and that's fine. But they might need to play some Granger at the four. And that might be where he's better, because he might not have to keep up with such fast guys. Where I probably would have said the opposite before the preseason started, not seeing how just slow he really is. He might be better off just playing that faux four position that the Heat kind of started, just keeping up with slower guys. Maybe that's just the way he needs to be used, and then that would allow James Ennis to be the second shooting small forward. And then Shannon Brown's the second shooting guard. And Shannon Brown had a good game yesterday. He showed some athleticism. He, unlike Ennis, he can handle the ball really well. And so having a Napier, Brown, Ennis, that in that second unit, if you could put them all on the court together, like we've seen briefly this preseason, that could be really fun to watch.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you could probably get some good burn out of Anderson at the center of the spot too. I think
he's not
necessarily as dynamic as he was a couple of years ago or even earlier in his career, obviously, but I think he caught an alley-oop yesterday from Napier, if I'm not mistaken, or was it Shannon Brown? I can't remember who tossed the alley at, but either way, he's still capable of finishing at the rim. Maybe make a platoon of him as him at the center if you want to go small ball. That might be a little bit of a quicker lineup if you get Napier in there. I mean, there's a lot of versatility there. There's a lot of different pieces. I think, you know, we relied so much on LeBron and the fact that he could play so many different positions that I think it's interesting to see how maybe you're not necessarily going back to a more traditional role, but, you know, you can still have the positionless team and have players that are versatile that you can work in and out of the lineup. So there's a lot of different things going on there. I'm very curious to see what McRoberts brings to the table, because I'm getting to the point now where I don't want to say I'm desperate necessarily, but I want to see him in there. I want to see him flourish. I want to see if that passing, that three-point shooting ability that he brings, whether or not it's just going to turn that first team offense into something much more dynamic than it's been, because it's looked stagnant at times. I mean, not until Ennis came in and really turned it up did we start to see a lot of that, you know, dynamic energy. You know, I know they started off very well yesterday against the Hawks, but we didn't see any kind of dynamic energy out of them, Orlando or the Pelicans. And so I think, or against the Cavs. And so I think we need to see how McRoberts can flourish and take that offense to the next level, because I think it's important to see what he can bring to this team. And you know, as long as he's still nursing that injury, there's still too many questions as to what role he can play and then how to best maximize the abilities of the remaining guys on the roster. You know, who do you bring in? If McRoberts is going to be at full strength and he's going to be such a versatile factor on offense, you know, really need somebody like Granger to come off. Does that push, you know, Haslam further down the rotation? It's going to be interesting to see, you know, how it all plays out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you're talking about that rotation and if Danny Granger's going to be used on the perimeter rotation or if he's going to be used in the power rotation, I think is really interesting. And I think what that comes down to is, does Eric Spoelstra want more James Ennis or does he want more Udonis Haslem? And maybe that's on a game-to-game basis. Because if you're putting Granger in that power rotation, then you're right. It pushes Haslem down. It moves Ennis up. But if you have Granger coming in for Luol Deng as opposed to maybe coming in for Josh McRoberts, then maybe Haslam's fourth big off the bench as opposed to Granger being the fourth big off the bench, and then that moves Ennis down in the rotation. And again, maybe it's a game-to-game thing. I'm one, after watching Haslam, saying you got to play that guy as little as possible. I mean, this might be another situation where he's on the bench for a lot of games and just doesn't see the court, because he was not good when he started at power forward. He just wasn't. He hit maybe two mid-range shots, maybe. You know, just like he hit a shot maybe once or twice. But on defense, he is so slow. And I love Udonis Haslem, top five favorite Heat player of all time, but the guy just can't really play for more than 5 minutes at a time anymore. It's just not there. And I think Ennis just offers a lot more right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate watching Haslem kind of continue to degrade there. And I think, you know, for a lot of fans, he gets a pass because he's been, you know, the heart of the team for so long, and he's been, you know, he's a Heat lifer. Like, you know, I know that sounds a little cliche at this point, just over the summer, but I mean, he definitely gets a pass in everybody's heart because, you know, he's meant so much to the franchise. He's made so many sacrifices as far as money, his body, playing time, what have you. He's done so much for the team on behalf of the team that, you know, you don't want to admit that maybe he might be done, but it was not good. Like, over the first couple of games, and even during the Cleveland game, you didn't see much from him. You know, aside from that baseline jumper he knocked down when LeBron James provided a screen for Norris Cole, I don't think there was much else that we saw from him. And Anderson, you know, he's looked really slow. And that's another guy. I think, you know, again, he came on board a couple of years ago, was part of that great 27-game win streak, and so it just kind of all seemed to catapult from there. And so I think a lot of fans appreciate everything he was able to bring to the team. But what happens when they're not bringing anymore? You know, if they're these great high-energy intensity guys and all of a sudden they don't bring that intensity or energy, what's the space for them on the roster? You know, what can they provide? Not much at this point. So it's kind of unfortunate seeing them continue to slide down as the end of their career nears.
Yeah, and that's not going to go away all season. It's only going to get worse, you would think, just, you know, logically, as they play more and more games. Who's that third big going to be? And I think that's why, I think in a way, I think that's why Spoelstra played Granger at the four yesterday, was to see what he could do at that position. And so now you know Bosch and McRoberts are going to be your starters. You need that third guy, hopefully a center, that can come in and kind of move Bosch to power forward, free him up for, you know, brief parts of the game where he can just be a power forward. Maybe it's still Anderson, but like I said, I'm assuming that gets worse. I'm assuming it gets slower as the season goes on, and you want to be at your best by the playoffs. Yeah. So, and we're presuming that the Heat will be in the playoffs. So I don't know if they make a move in December when these guys become tradable. I don't know if they make a move at the deadline, or if they find a free agent, if they go after Emeka Okafor when he's more healthy, you know, they're saying January, February, he could be kind of ready to play. I don't know if they said they were interested in Emeka Okafor. We've heard that. It's been rumored. I don't know. But to me, we'll know more once McRoberts comes in. I guess that's the first step. And maybe Anderson or Granger or Haslam, or maybe they just go by committee and they just say, okay, who's feeling good tonight? Okay, you're our third big. Maybe that's what they got to do for a little while.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems like, you know, a lot of us, you and I have talked about it. It seems like a foregone conclusion that we'd go after Okafor. But what if the desire isn't mutual? You know, what if he doesn't reciprocate that interest? You know, he might want to, as his career nears its end, maybe he wants to play for a contender. And, you know, by the time he might be fully healthy, maybe he would want to sign elsewhere. Maybe he might go back to the Western Conference. You know, who knows with him? It's hard to tell.
That's a good point.
But yeah. I mean, we really don't know what to expect. And as far as the trade market is concerned, you know, what assets do we have to unload to acquire a player that might be serviceable or a substantial upgrade over the guys that we have on the roster? I don't know that we make a move.
Well, if Napier improves, maybe they move Cole or Chalmers.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, really the only thing, because you don't want to move Napier or Ennis.
Right.
I don't think that's really the idea. I don't think that would accomplish anything. Maybe they move Danny Granger. He could be a tradable piece. If somebody thinks that they can find a way to use him, I don't know. That's tough. But I think getting McRoberts back is that first step and really just seeing what he can do. And I think that's going to help the ball movement. I don't think it's going to, you know, save everything. I think just in general, McRoberts coming back plus just general practice of, I mean, this team has only got seven guys that were on the team last year. And the most important guy, LeBron, who kind of made everything happen, isn't there anymore. So this is just going to be a whole process in general. But we saw Norris Cole play well last night. He had some really good passes into the paint, which I think are going to be really important this season, something that James is really good at, something that Wade has been good at. But if we can get that from the point guards, that's going to be huge. There was a couple times where he put his guys in position to score, but the shots didn't fall. But they should have been assists for Norris Cole. And I've been impressed with him. I really have. I think Chalmers, I don't want to keep picking on Chalmers. I almost feel bad, but what are you going to do for us, Chalmers? That's kind of the thing. Are you going to come off the bench and eat up second units? We've talked about him being a six man. I don't know what he does.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah, nobody does, right? That's the point.
Yeah, the mystery of Chalmers grows with every passing day, so I think we just kind of have to hope for the best. I mean, and Norris, I see what you're saying, and I think we've talked about that also, is that, you know, he's really solid. He does a lot of things, you know, well, but not great. And so we're kind of hoping in his fourth year now that he takes that next step, and we haven't seen it from him. So, I mean, what is he going to be able to provide? You know, he's young, he's a good defender, you know, he's a solid shooter at times, but, you know, he doesn't do anything really, really well, and so he just hasn't been able to carve out a niche for himself. So at some point, you know, you just kind of hope for something better than that, and maybe that guy's Napier, because it doesn't look to be Chalmers either, you know? I mean, he has that potential. I think his ceiling is higher. He just, you know, sometimes he reaches it, sometimes he doesn't care, sometimes he's perfectly comfortable being on the floor, and that's just Mario for him.
So a lot of Heat fans were disappointed that we didn't get Lowry or Eric Bledsoe. And I think for the most part, I don't think it was like an angry kind of thing. It was, why didn't you go get him? They kind of knew that we just didn't really have the cap space. I think, you know, Heat fans were well aware of that. At least from what I'm seeing on, like, Twitter and on, you know, the all-you-can-heat comments, people understand that we just didn't have the space to go after those guys. But they were still disappointed that we couldn't land one of them. But if this whole Napier thing does pan out, then that's going to be a better move than paying too much for Eric Bledsoe or paying too much for Kyle Lowry, which the Heat would have had to do in order to lure them away from their teams. You can't just look at what their contracts were. They would have to pay more than what those contracts were because they would have had to well, in the case of Bledsoe, would have had to outbid the Suns, who could have matched, and they would have had to convince Lowry to leave the Raptors. That would have taken more money. So, meanwhile, Napier's on a rookie-scale contract, and that's what the Heat have been missing this whole time, has been cheap guys who can be more than just a blip on the radar, guys that are consistently, you know, rotational guys that have consistent impact, like we saw from the Spurs, you know, Kawhi Leonard, but not just him, Patty Mills, guys like that. And that's kind of what Napier needs to be, even if he doesn't start this year. Being a rotational guy on that cheap contract is going to be huge for us. And like I said, in the long run, that could be even better than having Eric Bledsoe, who still hasn't played an entire season. That could be better than Kyle Lowry, who tends to have his best years in contract years.
Right.
So that's something else. Are you concerned about the 0-4 start at all?
No, and simply because I don't think that this is going to be the final product once the season starts. I mean, I think McRoberts should be healthy enough over the next couple of weeks. At least, I mean, that's the presumption. And I think you wrote a piece about whether he'll be ready for the start of the season. And with Washington, you know, dealing with their injuries and also a couple of suspensions, I think the Wizards, despite having, you know, John Wall and Paul Pierce, et cetera, I think that we'll still be able to beat them that first game of the season. So I think that's an encouraging start. And that's when the games really start to matter, obviously. I mean, I'm concerned in as much that nobody likes seeing the goose egg there, but when you look at the other team in the NBA who has yet to win a game, it's the Los Angeles Clippers. And I think everybody considers them to be a title contender. So I think, you know, I hate to sound like Spoelstra here, but there is a process. You want to try and do things well. You want to try and work on those little things and keep improving. And so long as you're seeing that improvement without a pretty, you know, substantial piece in McRoberts being on the floor, I think you still say that the preseason has been a success at this point. I mean, we're seeing really good things here. I know Tang has had a couple off nights scoring, which is not encouraging, but he's had some decent games as well. I think Wade's been good. I think he's fluid. He seems very spry and athletic. Bosch has been really well, mixing it up a lot more encouragingly than I had presumed he would be able to. I mean, I know we had talked about that quite a bit. He's going to be the guy that we saw in Toronto, plus the guy he's been over the last couple of years in Miami, and we've seen that, you know, a lot more driving the ball, a lot more, you know, working the low post and facilitating the offense. So he's done everything that we can hope for him. And then, you know, the young guys, you know, we just need to keep working them. And then if you can get those to be comfortable as the game starts and make actual contributions there, what else can you possibly hope for? So 0-4, would I love to be 4-0, of course, but I don't think it ultimately matters. I mean, and when you see the San Antonio Spurs losing to a team from, I have no idea where, somewhere in Europe, a Turkish team.
I have no idea. Geography's not my thing.
I don't take it too seriously, so I'm all about the process. I'm fully on board with the Spoism.
Yeah, there's worse people to sound like than Eric Spoelstra. At least he's like a millionaire, right? It could be worse. You could sound like Antoine Walker or something.
Yeah, and dating an ex-Heat cheerleader, so I mean, of all the...
He's doing something right.
Yeah.
So I completely agree with you. And as far as, like, Luol Deng, I just think his off nights have just been a factor of it's preseason. It's hard to get in rhythm in preseason. It just is. You know, rotations are so much more fluid and just, you know, sporadic and, okay, let's just see what this guy has and throw him on the court kind of thing. And I just don't think it's a matter of rhythm. I'm not too, and two of those games went to overtime, so those both, they could be 2-2, you know, those were toss-up games. And Bosch has looked really good. I did extrapolating his numbers per 36 minutes, which he figures about what he's going to play, he's averaging 25 and 11. That was before last night. I haven't done the averages since then, but he had a really good game last night too. So, yeah, they're probably higher. So 25 and 11 is probably... I think I threw something out like 22 and 10 would be like, you know, all-star level, and 25 and 11 is first team NBA. I mean, those are great numbers, and I think if he did that, people would, you know, he would take the NBA by storm again. You know, yeah, just people would be like, oh my gosh, this guy's like really good. I can't believe we ever doubted this guy.
That's MVP worthy, I think. On a team that might, you know, get as high as the third seed, I think you see 25-11, you have to, you know, put him in at least in the conversation to win. Durant missing some time.
Yeah,
God knows what will happen with LeBron's numbers. You know, I think 25-11 certainly puts him in the conversation, so I think that's a good discussion to have in the future.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Wouldn't that be the ultimate, like, FU? Like, the ultimate FU season, almost? Like, you guys doubted me for 4 years because I was a third option on a team with LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, two of, like, the greatest players that ever were on an NBA court. You guys doubted me for 4 years, but I've just been kind of waiting, and now I'm just going to have an MVP type year. That sounds a lot like Scottie Pippen, doesn't it?
Oh. Yeah, it sure does. A lot of people claim was, you know, slighted there in 95, so...
Okay, so the Heat play the Warriors on Friday. They play the Spurs on Saturday. Both will be good tests. Some good games last year between the Heat and the Warriors. Obviously, a lot has changed for both teams. Warriors have Steve Kerr coaching up, and the Heat don't have LeBron James. As we keep on, we got to make a rule where we just kind of. I've been trying. It's so easy to talk about the Heat not having LeBron James, and it's so, like, especially when you're blogging, to kind of throw that in there, like, Heat without LeBron James. Now, everybody knows that they don't have LeBron James. Is there, like, another way to say that they don't have LeBron James without saying they don't have LeBron James? Like, I've been trying life after LeBron. I don't know how to go about this, David. It's like
it's, the actual phrasing of it? I don't know.
Like, is it... It's hard not to put it in articles or in posts, but it's just everybody knows it. I don't know.
I'm okay with that. You know, I think we have to, you know, deal with at least this season. It's going to be the shadow of LeBron hanging over us. And I know that sounds melodramatic or what have you, but I mean, he defined the team for 4 years, and all of a sudden he's gone. I mean, and not only was he gone, like, it would have been one thing if he had ended on a good note, like a lot of players do with a championship, and then he, you know, just rode off into the sunset. But, you know, kind of flirting with Miami and flirting with Cleveland simultaneously, and then leaving the way he did. I think some people are still upset about it. You know, it's going to be a factor, and, you know, not just because of the hype machine it's going to build up towards Christmas Day and everything else, but, you know, he defined a team. He was the base of the team. The big three was something real and powerful and changed the scope of the NBA. And I think, you know, with him gone, you're going to see him impacting the team on many levels. And so I think that's just something we're going to have to deal with. I think maybe next year we can finally say, okay.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of however the playoffs shape up, then you can finally say, all right, this is the team that we've got now, and we are ready to move on. Whereas this year, we have to figure out how to move on from the LeBron James era. So, you know, I don't think there's anything to say about it other than LeBron is no longer on the team. I think that's just the reality. We have to put it out there, you know. And I've been very bitter and vocal about it, and I will continue to be so as the year progresses.
Good to know. Yeah, it's just everything's going to be viewed in that context now, and you're right, it's going to be not like until next year where we can just kind of focus on real basketball, because everything's kind of got that context now, but I am glad to just kind of focus on like real basketball without like the LeBron media around the team. But as far as the Warriors game tomorrow night, or I'm sorry, Friday night, yeah, like I was saying, there's been really good games. It's going to be a good challenge for the Heat because the Warriors have such great perimeter shooters. They have a lot of athleticism. It's probably not a safe bet to say that they're going to win their first game of the preseason, because I think the Warriors are just a better team right now, much deeper, certainly a stronger starting five right now. But, you know, since they lost the first four, who knows? They'll probably win this one. It's preseason. Anything can happen. Teams from Turkey or Czechoslovakia could beat the San Antonio Spurs. So, what are you looking at for that Warriors game? Is there anything particular? I kind of know what I want to see. Is there anything that you really want to see?
I think if Cole should get the start, which I expect him to do, how does he handle Steph Curry? I mean, does he get into foul trouble very quickly, and then all of a sudden we get Napier coming off the bench within 5 minutes of play? I mean, that could be a very interesting storyline. And then if Iguodala is going to continue to be the sixth man on the bench, does he counter, you know, the James Ennis factor? I mean, how they play off each other could be a really, really interesting matchup. I think they're just, they are going to dominate. It just, they would dominate in so many different aspects, because David Lee is one of those guys that just seems to get big numbers against us because of his energy. If Boga is any kind of a factor, our interior defense is so weak that I think they'll be able to dominate all night in the painted area. So I don't see us being able to make that a wash in any way. So we have to hope that our skill positions might be able to match up better with theirs. And I mean, they're just really good. They're really good from the outside. So we have to hope that our defense is strong enough to contain them. So that's what I'm looking at. Kind of the two matchups I'm most interested in are the point guard and then the sixth man, if and when Ennis comes in and plays against Iguodala. That should be an interesting matchup.
Yeah, and I think it matters if Chalmers comes back too. Because I still like him as a sixth man. I still want to see more of that. We only saw it once this preseason. I want more. And it was my idea, and if they use it, Spoelstra should pay me in some way. Because he definitely read All You Can Eat and was like, you know, that's not a bad idea. Because I published that article, and then he started Norris Cole like 2 days after. And I don't think that's a coincidence at all.
I don't either. No,
definitely not. So, I'm interested to see how they deal with those perimeter shooters. With Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, I want to see them close out and do a lot better than they did that last season. So I think that's something. I think you're right about Norris Cole and Steph Curry. If Cole starts the game, and I have a feeling he will, again, for like the fourth straight preseason game, it's an opportunity for him to win the job. Because you mentioned earlier, he doesn't do anything great, but he does a few things well. But if he could do one thing great that he can hang his hat on, that could win him the job. And if that one thing that's really great is just being an absolute lockdown defender. We don't really talk about 3-and-D guys as point guards, but if he could just be a 3-and-D guy, shoot, what he shot like 35% from three last year, not bad. Improving from what he has been, if he keeps improving, gets up to 38% and can be a lockdown defender. He could start games, even if he doesn't get the most minutes at point guard, he could still start the games, and that's an important thing. So I think he has an opportunity to just win the job outright if he plays Steph Curry really, really well. And then the other thing I'm looking at is how this last year that you would use Chris Bosh as a decoy to stretch deep teams like the Warriors who had really stout interior defenders. They would kind of just use Bosh out in as a decoy and just stretch the whole court and get that guy out of the paint so that Wade and LeBron can attack. But Bosh has so much more responsibility this season, not only scoring but to get to the rim and be near the rim, that I'm wondering if that, and without McRoberts. McRoberts is supposed to kind of replace that with Bosh to kind of just stand out there and just be a factor and a cog and just kind of pass the ball and move it like Bosh did last year. So without McRoberts, assuming he doesn't play, can Bosh still stretch a defense while also being aggressive? And I think that, and that's the other thing.
That's an interesting. Who's starting at the small forward position for the Warriors? Because I haven't checked, and I probably should have.
It's Iguodala still. So.
I thought he was the sixth man. I thought that was the scuttlebutt, was that he was going to be the sixth man at this point.
I haven't watched as many Warrior games as I probably should because I live out here. But I think he's still small forward unless they've been experimenting with him and then Harrison Barnes at the small forward. I think they did experiment with Iggy as a sixth man before, so I don't know what they're doing. I still think the Warriors should just put David Lee as their sixth man because he could just dominate second units, absolutely, and just put Harrison Barnes at the four and Iguodala in the starting unit and just do whatever and space the floor with Bogut in the middle. But this isn't a Warriors podcast, so.
Yeah. Have you noticed how he kills us, though? Like he just one
David
of those
Lee?
Guys, just,
yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what it is, if it's his manic energy or the fact that he's always cutting to the hoop. And you know, obviously, over the last couple of years, with Udonis slowing down and guarding him, I think he's just been able to dominate that matchup. And it's just, I'd like to hope that, I don't know who's going to start the power forward position, but, you know, somebody's going to be able to keep him out of the paint. That should be interesting with it.
You can almost predict those are the guys. Paul Millsap does the same thing against, you know, the Heat. Every time he plays the Hawks, every time the Hawks play the Heat, Millsap has a crazy good game. Al Jefferson, crazy good game against the Heat. It was just borderline dominant in that first round of the playoffs between the Charlotte, formerly known as Bobcats, now the Hornets. He was just borderline dominant, but they just didn't have much around him, and the Heat obviously won that series. But you could pretty, like, those active big guys who can score, like, in multiple ways, you could just predict. Like, they could have maybe never played the Heat before, and you just know, okay, that guy's going to have, like, 16 points in the first half. They're just all kind of the same, in the same mold. Yeah, so, yeah, that's going to be a concern, but you're right. Udonis Haslem was the guy that used to take those guys out because maybe he wasn't as athletic as those guys, but he was just, you know, just ferocious and just would basically just not take no for an answer and just stop these guys kind of thing. And the Heat lacked that, and Chris Anderson provided that a couple of years ago, and he doesn't so much anymore. And now we're kind of back where we started, where the Heat clearly need to address that big man position, that third big position. Yeah. But we talked about that plenty, so.
And it doesn't get any easier on Saturday when we take on the Spurs either.
Right. That's not, that's, I don't know if that's going to be as drama-filled. I have a feeling Greg Popovich is just going to rest all of his players, even though it's preseason. Who knows? But he tends to do that for some reason. We'll probably get it. I think it depends if everybody just gets super hyped for it. Then he'll be like, you know what, I'm just going to rest him. But if nobody's paying attention to it, he'll just play his guys. But that's a game where you're interested to see that Bosch versus Duncan matchup now. Again, because Bosch is a major factor. So how does he and Duncan go up against each other now that Bosch is a focal point and Duncan has been the focal point? I think that's interesting. And then the other thing is, how do the Heat just react to facing the Spurs again? I think it was more of a psychological thing for LeBron, but this team just got flat out dominated against the Spurs, and they've been, I guarantee you've been just watching video, maybe not that series, but of the Spurs all offseason, trying to, Spoelstra certainly has, trying to replicate that ball movement. I don't know if they just, like, line up on defense and just not move, just all everybody line up with clipboards and just take notes while the Spurs pass the ball around them. I don't know what they're going to do because the game is just basically, you know, it's going to be pointless between two veteran squads. They're just going to kind of roll the ball out there, I feel like.
Yeah, and I wonder too, because to me anyway, maybe I'm in the minority here, but it just doesn't seem like it will have as much drama surrounding it as the Cleveland matchup did. And just because that was the real storyline, I think. I think now LeBron gone again.
Exactly.
To the whole LeBron thing. He's just, I think this team is so far removed from who we were even just a few months ago in the finals that I don't think it matters anymore.
Exactly.
The matchup against the Spurs isn't nearly as sexy a matchup as it was just a few months ago. So I think it's just about matching up and seeing how we might be able to keep this from getting to be a blowout. And I think there's a game in the Spurs' future either tonight or tomorrow. I'm not sure when that. Already some of the key players, and even Popovich is sitting out of, so I don't know if you've heard anything about that. But
no, Popovich isn't coaching in one of the games?
Yeah, I don't know why. There's a game coming up, and he's just like, yeah, I'm not going to travel with a team. Somebody else that we're on the sidelines can coach him. So, yeah, he's just already taking himself out of the game. I don't know if it's for,
Can we get a Duncan player coach? Can we get that? That would be amazing.
He's not going to be, he's one of the guys that's sitting out. So Duncan's sitting out, I think Parker's out, I think Ginobili's out. So it's their big three. And Pop, for some reason, they're like, we don't even want to go to the game.
So we got a Boris Diaw player coach then.
Everybody sits around eating croissants. And
this is our gameplay, guys.
Hey, check out that girl in the second row. I got dibs. Oh, Boris, you wild man.
Okay, so anything else, David? Like, anything that you're, like, really... I think... To me, the it's so obvious what's hurting this team right now, and it's just ball movement, and that's a matter of building chemistry. Is there anything that's like really concerning you about this team that we haven't talked about? Like, are you worried? I don't feel like talking to you. You don't sound worried.
I don't know, and maybe that's my problem.
I'm not worried either.
Yeah,
but I feel like everybody on the message boards and on Twitter and every other Heat fan I'm talking to is like freaking out.
Zach Lowe of Grantland talked about, I think in a response to Dan Le Batard as far as what teams have gotten worse this season, I think Lowe's response was that the Heat are one of those teams, and he predicted that the Heat would be kind of a sixth seed out in the Eastern Conference. So maybe we're too immersed in the Heat, and maybe from a slightly biased perspective, although as journalists, neither of us are really biased or could we afford to be, but I think, Lowe is definitely much less biased than we could be, and so he sees the Heat as being the 16th, if even. I think a lot of people are thinking that maybe Miami will miss on the playoffs altogether. And
Zach Lowe tends to be a little low on the Heat, at least in LeBron. I don't think he hates on the Heat, but like in the LeBron era, he's always been a little low on the, like, I don't mean that in a pun, but he's just always been like a little down on the Heat. And again, I don't think it's like a personal thing. I just don't know if he completely buys into the whole small ball positionless thing. I don't know what it is, but
no, yeah, I think he's much more analytical. Like, mm-hmm. You know, those 3,000 word pieces on who effectively runs a screen and roll. You know, I mean, those kinds of things. He's really great at that, and I think he sees what you and I have seen in a much smaller scale as far as the weaknesses of the Heat over the last few years. And Miami has, for the most part, been able to transcend that and get past it and still make it to the finals and at least two cases win the championship. So I think we've seen, you know, again, that smaller scale, you know, the weaknesses haven't been as dramatic as he made them out to be, but he's just much better at finding those weaknesses and discussing them in those long pieces. Mm-hmm. So I think he sees the Eastern Conference and he sees the bottleneck as far as, you know, you have to give Cleveland and Chicago the 1-2 seed in one way or the other. And then you've got Toronto, Washington, despite the injuries, Atlanta, yeah. Charlotte, that's improved, and then Miami. And, you know, that's five good teams, all of which could be vying for those 3-8 spots. So, I mean, there's a lot going on there. And I think that's why he says the Heat are going to have a problem because LeBron did so much for this team that without him, even though Lu Deng is a very good, serviceable player, he's not going to be able to reproduce what James did. And so that's why he kind of sees this tumbling as much as he does.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty much the general, and not to knock Lu, but just a little bit broader. That's the general thought process about the Heat is, okay, you lost LeBron, you replaced him with Lu Deng, this is your team now. And that's your logical drop-off. Whatever the difference between LeBron James and Lu Deng is your drop-off. And I don't really see it that way because you need to factor in Chris Bosh is going to elevate his game. Dwayne Wade, did you see that Instagram post, David? I mean, that guy's ripped. That guy's in the best condition I've seen him in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Maybe except for that first year where like his knee wasn't, you know, half incomplete. But... So, I think Wade elevates his game and plays more games. And so you have to kind of factor that in. So I don't know if it's necessarily just that logical drop-off, which is what everybody keeps saying, is between from LeBron to Deng. I think there's other factors there. And obviously some more role players and different things. Hopefully they're a little bit faster in that second unit. And I think that's going to be something. And I kind of wrote about this a few weeks ago, but... this team took a lot of gambles last season and it didn't pay off all the time because LeBron would continue to gamble. He's such a ridiculously athletic dominant force that he would always gamble. And a lot of times it ended up just being easy baskets. And it probably ended up more of a plus than a negative at the end of the season. But when he would gamble and maybe miss on a steal attempt or something, that forced the other help defenders to move around, and guys like Battier and Rashard Lewis, they just couldn't, and Haslam, they just couldn't do it. And that ended up in so many open threes last season. I just, specifically when LeBron would gamble or Norris Cole or Mario Chalmers. Mario Chalmers had this ridiculous goal of averaging 2 steals a game last year. I still think that was just insane to say that. Go win a championship, dude. Like, and he, like, every night that was on his mind, he continued to gamble for steals every night. And they're just always on that help defense was so slow, and if that could be improved too. And now I'm getting into like little things, very specific things, but I think there's a lot of factors. So I don't know. I think the Raptors are probably better. I think that the Wizards are probably better. And then I think they're, if they have Beal back, and then other than that, I think the Heat are probably looking at something like a 4 or 5 seed. And if Lowe has us a 6 seed, that's not much of a difference, but... I guess it doesn't really matter in the Eastern Conference either. You just kind of want to be on the right side of the bracket, the side that's not on LeBron James's side.
Right, yeah, and I think that's ultimately what matters. But, yeah, I mean, I actually had them ranked as high as the 3rd seed. I actually think that they'll be able to pull it out, but I'm a little concerned. But not really. I don't know. It's hard to say because I am encouraged by what we've seen, and I think, you know, we're going to get so much production out of multiple players to make up for the loss of James, so I'm actually very, very happy to see how this team shapes up if they reach the ceiling that I think they're capable of. And so maybe that's the difference, is that from a fan's perspective, maybe we're thinking that the ceiling is how high they'll go, and that's what we see them mm-hmm. at, whereas maybe Lowe sees them much more realistically and with less of a bias. But whatever, we'll see how it all pans out. The point is, we're just a few weeks away from the regular season, and I think we're off to a good start already.
Yeah, I'm pumped. I think this is going to be so much fun. I think this team's going to be so much fun to watch.
Yeah. There were moments there during that second quarter when that lead kept building up against the Hawks, where you were seeing some really dynamic, you know, ball movement, and it was just a great, you know, free flowing offense, and Ennis with that energy on defense, you know, causing chaos. I mean, that was a hell of a lot of fun. I think that's going to be something that we can see more of over the future.
Absolutely. All right. We're on iTunes now, so check us out, Heat Check. Find us on SoundCloud. Check out allyoucanheat.com. You can find my writing. You can find David Ramil's writing over there. We'll be back next week. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.